Riding high off of 17 straight Suns wins, a midweek check-in on the Phoenix Suns, Devin Booker injury update, and more coming up with Matt Moore of Locked On Nuggets and the Action Network coming up just for you on Locked On Suns.
Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, covering the Suns the past five seasons as a credentialed media member. Thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen every single morning. It's been pretty easy to listen lately, but we do appreciate it. 17 straight wins, of course. You can listen to us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you are. That is the best way to support the show, is simply to listen like you already are. You can follow us at Locked On PHX Suns on Twitter if you haven't already. Follow me at BrendanKleen14, but let's get right to it. Matt Moore is our guest. He is a writer over at the Action Network. He is a host of the Locked On Nuggets podcast, Locked On NBA podcast. And let's start with the Booker injury update, Matt. Not great news, but also sounds mostly precautionary. He pulled that left hamstring in the second quarter yesterday against the Warriors. Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN saying it sounds like they're just keeping him out for 2-3 weeks. I mean, it's. I don't think there's been a complete MRI, or at least those results have not been reported or released yet. So doesn't sound like it's going to be anything bad, but this is an injury that Booker's dealt with in the past. So I guess, you know, there's not a ton to say here, but who would you kind of like to see more of in the absence of Devin Booker, Matt? From what you've seen of the Suns, from the way they closed that game last night, who's somebody you would have your eye on in terms of, you know, stepping up, playing more minutes during his absence?
I mean, I think the first thing is just, it does sound precautionary, and the big key here is just the trip with hamstrings is that they re-injure really easily. Is that yes. If you try and play on it, if you rush them back, then they suffer another setback. Like Harden dealt with this last year, right? Like he had the hamstring injury, he comes back, he re-aggravates it. He's out longer. He's not like, he doesn't look anything like himself at the end of that playoff series. And so that's a concern, right? And you got the luxury of being able to be cautious with it because the Suns have been, you know, they won that game versus the best record team in the West last night without him for the second half. So like that's an indicator of how good they are. They can definitely keep winning, and especially winning at a high pace, even if the streak ends at some point, which is probably honestly good for them at some point, but they'll be fine without Booker. You know, look, I mean, I think, their system is so good at putting guys in low pressure situations. Like it's easy to be like, well, you know, Bridges has been phenomenal. Let's give him more touches. But I think honestly, like it's probably, you know, I honestly want to see more from Cameron Johnson. Like I just love Cameron Johnson and what he's done for them and how good he was last year. And I continue to think that he's been really impressive. I thought it was interesting last night that they ran a lot of switch action with Cam Johnson screening for Chris Paul. And they generated a lot of really good looks versus switching coverage with that by getting the Warriors out of comfortable rotations. So I think that there's a number of ways that they can go. But look, the system's still going to be the same. It's going to be Chris Paul pick and roll with Aiden or McGee getting to shooters. Mikal Bridges, you know, continuing to play awesome. I don't think you have to necessarily find like a big step up to win every night because the defense has been so solid. It's going to be rough. It'll be harder for a little while, but the Suns aren't going to be in a lot of trouble. That's not about how that doesn't mean to indicate that Booker's not essential for their success. It's more about how the Suns in really honestly impressive fashion and against my preseason expectations, I was wrong, have developed a regular season formula that is going to insulate them against missing a player as important and as good as Booker.
I think that's totally fair. I think your point about re-aggravating is probably the thing driving their patience here.
Yeah.
Because he had this injury in January, late January of 2021, was really the only star player to miss any time for the Suns last year, but it was basically the same injury. And then in game three of the finals, when he got benched and then, you know, came to find out that that continued to bother him to some degree, that was also a hamstring injury. I don't think we've ever gotten clarity. I tried to go back and do some homework after last night to see. I don't know if it was ever reported if that was left or right back in the finals. So I don't know there, but The point being, this is something, if there is any such thing as a lingering injury for Devin Booker throughout his career, it's been this. And so I think playing it safe is smart, which leads us to what you said, that he is obviously a guy who is going to be missed, but at the same time is relatively replaceable. I also feel like just the type of depth that they specifically have is helpful here, because Cam Johnson can, you know, honestly run some of the stuff that, like, we've seen Booker and Johnson start to be the player in Booker's position in some of these sets. Not so much of the on-ball stuff, but, you know, being the guy who can pop up to the top of the arc in a Spain pick and roll, or, you know, they're really just as smart as he is at moving off the ball in the corners or on the wing during a pick and roll between Paul and Ayton. And some of that stuff is pretty interchangeable already. I think we just have to highlight, though, it seems like Elfrid Payton will be the guy to play a little bit, maybe 5 to 10 minutes a night. I think you just try to survive those minutes. You're going to be really small in those minutes, but the Suns were already running a 9-man rotation with Kaminsky and Nader out. They don't really have another guy to turn to. They seem dead set on not giving Jalen Smith any playing time at all. So he doesn't seem like he's going to be a solution to upgrade that size. And then the other two players on the roster are two-way guys. So they're going to be thin. They're going to be small for the foreseeable future here. And then Landry Shamet, of course. I would imagine he will start. He is shooting 38% from deep, which I feel like does not back up what the eye tells. Like, it feels like a guy, I think somebody tweeted this last night, I've never actually seen Landry Shamet make a three. That is really what it feels like watching this guy. But I think this could be an opportunity for him to settle in, because he has looked uncomfortable. He's only shooting 38% from the field, despite all those threes going in, and hasn't really flashed that playmaking the Suns were hoping to see. Like, just hasn't seemed comfortable. So I think that's probably the upshot, the upside of a lot of this injury change that we might see.
Yeah, I mean, look, Shamet's been a consistent three-point shooter in his career. You know, like, he like 45% with the Clippers in 2019 in 25 games. It's like a small number there, but like 38% in 53 games with the Clippers the following season, 39% with Brooklyn last season in 61 games. So, like, he's a consistently good shooter. I think a lot of it is Shamet early in his career with the Clippers looked like he could be like an on-ball, off-ball, like cuts and finishes and those types of things. And I think he's more of just like, he's just a shooter. Like, that's honestly like really all he can do. But like, I wrote about this for Action Network. The good thing about the Suns, and a lot of this is because of what is because of CP3, right? Like, it's individually and Booker, to be clear. So without Booker, this is where you're going to need more guys to kind of do some stuff on their own. But I think maybe that's where you look for Cam Johnson and Bridges to maybe be like, all right, let's get them involved in a few pick and roll situations. Let's give them a few ISO and see what they can do on their own opportunities. Like, I actually like Cam Johnson off the dribble quite a bit, but the Suns are excellent in that basically Booker and Paul take low percentage shots and convert them at a high rate because they're individually fantastic. Like, they are exceptional players offensively. Everybody else just takes high quality looks. Like, this is my favorite stat that I found. I removed Booker and Paul and then took out everybody that wasn't playing, that hasn't played more than 100 minutes with the team so far. And I looked at what their expected field goal percentage is, because that's a good measure of how good of looks are you generating. They were generating what would have been the number one best percentage league-wide by about 5 percentage points. Now, like, look, this is, you could do that for a lot of teams in that kind of spot, like Utah, right? But it does show you that what the Suns do is Booker and Paul get to take low percentage shots that they convert at a high rate because they're excellent. And then everybody else just does their job. And like, that's the key with Shamet, right? It's like, Shamet can step in. The system, I think, just becomes a lot more, honestly, it's going to be a lot more Chris Paul heliocentric. Maybe the big key there, though, is like if Cameron Payne's going to get himself a little bit more back on track, it may have to be in this stretch where they're going to suffer a little bit offensively, even if the defense can still carry them.
No, that's a great call. We will see a lot of Paul and Payne lineups, a lot of Paul, Payne, and Shamet, a lot of Payton. So getting some support from those other guards is going to be pretty important. And it'll also be interesting just to see, not that I don't think Chris Paul can change his mindset, but he has very much been a let everybody else do everything type of player. So maybe there will be some growing pains seeing him kind of click into more of an aggressive offensive look. I don't know. I feel like kind of silly even saying that, but he has just been so willing to let other guys do the damage that, you know, if he does have to score a little bit, it might look a little different. It might take a game or two. The Pistons are a nice place to start. But I want to get Matt's thoughts here on the Warriors game, just what we saw in that battle. And we might even check in on the Suns Twitter debate of the day. We'll do that right after a quick break. Pop quiz. Do you know why free trials renew without your consent? Well, it's a business scam, no question. Don't let greedy corporations pocket your money. Download Truebill to take control of your subscriptions. Truebill is the new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions you don't need, want, or even just forgot about. On average, people save up to $720 per year with Truebill. Because companies make subscriptions hard to cancel, Truebill flips that on its head, makes it incredibly simple. Just link your accounts and Truebill will cancel your unwanted subscriptions in just one tap. And your Truebill concierge is there when you need them to cancel unwanted subscriptions so you don't have to, even when you are not in control. It will find them for you. So don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Go right now. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. It could save you thousands a year. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Ding. Love that sound. It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big business only, so upstart startups and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility, and Shopify helps you make your entrepreneurial dreams come true. Shopify powers over 1.7 million businesses from first sale to full scale, reaching customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. It allows you to gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. So go to Shopify.com/LockedOnNBA. That's all lowercase. Make sure case sensitive for a free 14-day trial to get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to Shopify, Shopify.com/LockedOnNBA right now. Shopify.com/LockedOnNBA. Okay. Let's start here because this was somehow becoming a dialogue today because of the way that Bridges stopped Curry is sort of the narrative that formed after the game. This idea that Bridges is a defensive player of the year candidate. I have my thoughts, and it's not even personal to Bridges necessarily, but what have you seen from him defensively? Do you feel like there's a leap happening? Do you feel like it's just this thing that happens when teams are really good, and then the second year they tend to get a lot of attention? Where do you think this buzz is coming from? Or is it just made up in Suns land and it's not real at all?
Oh, no, I think it's real. Like, I think he's going to get, he's getting a conversation. Look, he's exceptionally popular with, he's got a couple things going for him right now. He's exceptionally popular with analytics wonks, right? So the numbers always bear out well. The like real in-depth hoop nerd, dig into the film, posting threads on Twitter people, they see how good he is, right? He plays for a winning team. He's had a big playoff run. I absolutely do think this is we're always a year late, you know? Yeah. And I'm not saying that he was defensive player of the year last year.
But he didn't even make an all-defense team. That's the crazy part.
Yeah, I don't know if I would have him number one even this year. I think there's a lot of candidates that go in that category, but I think he's amazing, right? He's been absolutely excellent. It is kind of, however, typical, and I'll say this, like, that game is going to resonate and stay with voters. The biggest thing I got to say is, like, and I do this a lot with Action, where there's just a big difference between if you're trying to determine who should win the award and who's going to win the award. Yes. Those are two very different conversations, and never is it more prevalent than with Defensive Player of the Year. The work you have to do, in my opinion, to really come up with a Defensive Player of the Year list is so extensive, and it's mind. I'm being real here. It's boring. Like, you have to go through the top guys and you have to just watch them basically contest shots over and over and over again. That you could be like, and a lot of them you could just be like, well, they could have made that one, or oh, he should have made that one, or oh, he made that one, but it was a really good contest, or oh wow, look at the way he bodied him here. You pick up a lot about these guys, but it takes so much work. So the key here is that instead there's always like the shorthand, and like Rudy Gobert being the basically center of the best defensive system in the league has boosted him in all these situations over the last couple of years, and deservedly so. Like, Gobert is hugely impactful. It's hard for wings to win it, but having a night like what he did, where Steph, like, I'm just gonna be real with you, like, Steph, McHale did the job that he was supposed to. McHale played great defense. You can play great defense and Chris and Steph Curry not shoot 4 of 21 from the field. Like, this is just like, those two things don't necessarily have to be correlated, but that's a night that will stick with voters. And when they look at it at the end of the year, if the Suns still have, you know, the second best defense or best defense in the league, that's going to carry a lot of weight. So, like, I think he's going to be in the conversation. I think there will be a lot of guys. I think it's hard to get past the bigs. It's always been tough to get past bigs in this league. But I do think McHale belongs in the conversation, and I think that he will be in the conversation, provided he stays healthy this season.
Yeah, they're going to have a lot more opportunities like that as well. I mean, they play the Trailblazers in a couple of weeks, I think, on national TV. He'll get to guard Dame Lillard. They play the Warriors again on Christmas. Like, there is this West Coast thing or this national TV bias too, where it's like, if you're the only game on that anybody's paying attention to, they are going to watch and they're going to identify your impact, and you might get a little more credit for that than you might otherwise. I did think it was funny on the note of Wings winning the award, because Andre Iguodala has taken a liking to Mikal Bridges. He tweets about him sometimes. He clearly likes the guy. He didn't play last night. They didn't get to compete against each other, but walking out of the press conferences post game, Mikal and DeAndre did it together, and they were leaving, and I just happened to be walking behind them. Sean Livingston is a Warriors assistant now. He was completely ragging on Mikal, kind of making fun of him because of how humble Mikal is and calling him mini Andre. So I guess to me, it's going to have to be that recognition thing and sort of that narrative and reputation part of it, more so than maybe the statistics, because I just think it's really hard for the Wings to accumulate the defensive on-off, the contesting. The contest data is really only trustworthy for bigs, so even some of the data we have isn't very good for Wings to even measure what they do. It's hard.
Stocks, like, this is part of it, is, like, stocks are still important. Like, they just have been.
Yeah.
You know? Like, they do factor into these types of things. You know, rebounds, honestly, this is a lot of it, is like, rebounding is still, it's interesting, because like I do honestly consider rebounds to be almost an entirely different category than defense. But it is still like, that's way outside of what the common thought is, which is like, rebounding is a massive indicator and has been. Again, you know, I think we do have enough expertise now, and you're going to see, they will see enough stats on Twitter about the on-off differentials that helps a ton. I'll also say this, though, like, it's hard when McHale plays really solid defense and does all of the types of things. There's just a difference between like what McHale does, and let's compare him with like a Matisse Thybulle, who is just like a dog, right? Like, he is very much like the Avery Bradley on ball, going to absolutely just be up under you at all times, constantly making plays. I always say that there's kind of the difference between defensive, like, positional defense and defensive playmaking, and Matisse Thybulle is both, and Bridges is much more of one than the other, though I think, like, I haven't checked, but I'm sure that his like steal and deflections rate is still really high. But I mean, look, you can look at the on-off numbers. The one of the problems for the Suns is like the on-off, like, this will honestly be an issue, right? The Suns' defense is better with McHale on the bench by a point. That is not to say that McHale is the reason for that. That is not to say that the defense, because McHale's going up against the starters. Like, we know how good McHale is, but with a lot of the candidates now, you are able to look at theirs and say, like, oh, he makes that defense so much better that's why he deserves this award. Like, these are the things that come into play, again, because defense is hard to evaluate. Like, I could spend the entire season just working on defense, and it would fill up my time just to come up with an accurate and good representation of who the actual best defensive player in the league is.
It's one of those things that you feel like should probably only be voted on by like the video interns and, you know, assistant coaches who make game plans.
The players would say the players, but they're, I'll say this, not terrible.
A lot of that's reputation based. I feel like they're scared of the guys who they think are good at defense, you know?
Versus like what actually happens. Like, I think this is an interesting argument always to have with a player where I get that playing against Avery Bradley feels like hell. I am very much aware that playing against Avery Bradley feels like hell.
Or it's the Russ thing with Patrick Beverley fooling y'all, right? It's that. It's like it looks, you can look good at defense.
Yeah, it looks good at defense, right? And I know that the players are smart enough to know the difference between those things, right? To know who's actually really good at making all those things. But you do, I think, have to have a big picture view of it and go through the film to constantly be like, you know what? He just never gets beat off the dribble. Like, he never gets beat on a closeout. Like, he gets beat off a closeout maybe once every two games. Or look how when he recovers, when he lets a guy go by. Because that was something that I learned from interviewing Iguodala, was a lot of it sometimes is you let the guy beat you at the first step and then you try and recover on the backside. Right. Like, it's those type of things. It's how well do you know your personnel? Do you leave the right guys open? Like, these things are difficult to try and ascertain. Defense is such a complicated thing in the NBA. It's so systemic. But again, I do think that Bridges' reputation is preceding him now, and he'll be in the conversation, rightfully so, by the end of the year.
Yeah, I do have to shout you out. The piece you wrote about Kawhi a long time ago and why the Spurs defense was better with him off the floor was really smart, and it's about this topic, so people should go read that. I think that's at CBS still, but that was a good piece. I feel like the thing that I'll close with on Mikhail is I feel that the reason he's getting more notoriety now, too, is that he is not only taking those matchups, but he's actually increasing his off-ball impact while also getting those matchups. It used to be one or the other, where he might have a good night and shut down whoever, Dame Lillard, but you wouldn't really feel him in any other aspect of the game. Now it's both, and so I think that's why I feel like he's been a little bit better. I don't know if the numbers back that up, but that's just my feeling. I want to get maybe a little bit more big picture on this Warriors game and what, if anything, we've learned. The Suns have not played a lot of the best teams in the Western Conference, but a lot of those teams have also not been very good. So we'll talk about how the Suns stack up, maybe what this game taught us, what we're looking forward to in Friday's matchup right after another quick break. Today's episode of Locked On Suns brought to you by BetOnline.ag. BetOnline has you covered all season for more props, odds, and lines than ever before as football season continues its march to the playoffs. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all these sports action all year long. You, maybe, could be the beneficiary of watching as, is this the year Alabama doesn't go to the playoff? Is this the year that Notre Dame, after its head coach leaves, ends up in the playoffs? Or maybe you're a Cardinals fan just like me and you want to see them get the job done and you can put a little money down as well. BetOnline, again, remains your number one spot all year long. So head to their new updated desktop or mobile app, make an account today, and when you do, use the promo code LOCKEDON when you make your first deposit to get a 50% welcome bonus. That's promo code LOCKEDON when you make your first deposit to get a 50% welcome bonus straight to your account. From football and basketball to the NHL, boxing, UFC, even your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait. Take advantage of all the amazing offers available all year long. Bet online the fastest and the easiest way to bet on all of your favorite sports. Bet online where the game starts. Okay, 104-96 last night, Matt. The Suns beat the Warriors. No Devin Booker in the second half. The Warriors, I believe, scored like 40-something points in the second half. We talked about Steph Curry's poor performance. No Iguodala. Wiggins was questionable. He did not have a great night. They don't have their players still, for all intents and purposes, Clay, Wiseman, etc. So I don't necessarily feel like this game will be the one we really look back to, but Christmas might be, and that's not too far away. And so I was really struck by how much the coaches seem to kind of empty their strategy books a little more than I expected in terms of some of the stuff you were talking about with who was screening for Chris Paul, attacking mismatches in that way, freeing things up, having Draymond on Chris Paul. Not that that's something that we have never seen from the Warriors, but it felt like we saw a game that both teams wanted to win in a way that maybe I wasn't necessarily expecting, especially on the Warriors side. So what else did you come away from that game learning that we might be able to take with us the next 60 games or so?
So I think the big takeaway for me is that it's not a bad matchup for the Suns. And that seems obvious, right? Like, well, you know, thanks, Matt. They beat the Warriors without Devin Booker. They don't match up badly. Congrats. But what I'm saying is, even if we account for Steph's performance, and even if we account for what I think were not uncharacteristic, because the Warriors are sloppy as hell, they're always a turnover-prone team. However, like, the last 5 minutes of that game really was a comedy of errors. Like, I was like, man, the Warriors melted down here. And a bunch of Suns fans were like, no, the Suns are just good. I was like, look, it can be both. But when the Warriors are literally just like, when Draymond is trying Russell Westbrook type layups and blowing them off of the front of the lit, like, I don't know what Draymond was doing in the last 5 minutes of that game. I really have no idea. But the key here is that the Suns put themselves in a position to have the lead and put the clamps down, as they so often do in clutch time, because of their ability to match up. The Warriors never really hit them with a dynamite run that put them on their heels. And when they did, Monty was good about timeouts in terms of maintaining the pace of that game and maintaining the flow. I think one of the keys is Ayton showed enough of being able, you mentioned like they emptied their books a little bit more. I'll say this. The Suns didn't attack the switch with Ayton as much as they could have. And they didn't attack the switch with Chris Paul as much as they could have. I was really surprised because like, I actually like ran the numbers of the 23 times that they were recorded as switching last night. The Warriors did versus the Suns pick and roll. They passed on 21 of them. And what I mean by that is not just like, it was sometimes a pass to like Ayton on the slip or whatever, but they also were just basically, the Warriors didn't trust their switches. They were helping over. So the Suns were making quick rotation passes and then beating their guy off the dribble off of bad closeouts. You mentioned Wiggins. The back really shows up when Wiggins is trying to get over and he just gets blown by because he's helping over because they didn't trust their switches. That's a big part of what the Warriors do is we're going to switch everything. We don't care what you do. We're not going to help. We're never going to get caught in help rotation. We're never going to do that. So you're always going to have to get by us. They didn't stick with that last night. And the Suns were able to pressure that and trust their guys to make plays off the dribble who were not just Chris Paul and Devin Booker. And that was, I think, a big part of the success. Defensively, look, I think it's hard for me to really like evaluate the Suns' success when Steph goes 4 of 21. Steph has like a sub 500 night. Okay, they did a lot of good things well. Here's what we can look at. And we can still like take a lot away. But I do think when you have an outlier performance like that, it's hard to be like, okay, that's what we can expect going forward. I think the Warriors win Friday because of the Devin Booker injury, Suns on a back-to-back, and usually the team that loses the first one wins the second one. But if you ask me to project out to a Western Conference Finals series 5 months from, or 6 months from now, going into last night's game, I would have probably wanted to say, I like Warriors probably minus 150, and now I'm probably at like minus 125, minus 115, maybe even closer. Mm-hmm. If Suns have home court, that probably goes to pick them. Like, the Suns are right there. And that's important because of what the Warriors are able to bring to the table. I think the biggest and most fascinating difference between these two teams is how the Warriors are so explosive and the Suns are not. They're just so consistent. The Warriors are inconsistent, but highly explosive. The Suns are non-explosive, but it's extremely consistent. And that's what I think is going to make all four matchups of this series this season and hopefully in the playoffs spectacular.
Yeah, I'm rooting for it completely. I'm rooting for Klay to be healthy on Christmas, at least just to play. Yeah. I don't know if we're going to be there, but I just want to see that. I think I'm going to be at that game. That's probably just selfish on my part. I want to have a better game, more conclusive game. I will say, in addition to Steph going 4 of 21, what makes it hard for me to judge is that the big playmakers that the Warriors rely on between Draymond, Bielitsa and Juan Toscano-Anderson all played pretty badly as playmakers. Yeah. They combined for 11 turnovers. Bielitsa was a complete negative. Actually, on defense, he was kind of stopping Booker on a few possessions, but that was, I think, right when the Warriors started to adjust their defense, and it took Booker a couple possessions to figure it out, and then he got a few points off of it anyway, so I don't necessarily feel like that was teaching us anything, but that isn't going to happen again, where Draymond, Bielitsa, and JTA, I mean, JTA might maybe just, this game didn't do him any favors of staying at 13 minutes. He might just play less, but that's just not going to happen again. So I think it is hard in that regard to really draw any major conclusions. The other thing I wanted to point to and see if you had any thoughts on was, you mentioned the pace, you mentioned Monty's timeouts. This game was played pretty slowly. Yeah. For two teams who, I mean, the Suns early this year have been pretty fast. The Warriors obviously love to be selectively fast and turn defense into offense. I mean, both teams rely on that a lot. It just didn't happen. I mean, to not even crack 105 points, what do you think was the most to blame for that? Because the Warriors turned the ball over 22 times. You'd think the Suns could have punished them for that, but they didn't really run. So is that something you feel like is going to continue, or was that just sort of a 48-minute sample?
You mentioned how it felt like a more of a playoff game while not being like, no regular season game is a playoff game, but it felt like more of one. That I think is a good indicator of this, because like, look, dunksandthrees.com, which is like basically my favorite stats website on the planet right now. Suns are sixth in offensive possession length. So shortest possession length, they have the sixth shortest on average. Warriors are seventh. This should have been an up and down game. The fact that it wasn't speaks to two things: an attention to detail and caring enough about this game to get back defensively and slow down those transition opportunities, and then looking more to grind it out, knowing like, this is a really good team. We have to be careful. We have to take this seriously, and we have to execute. And the Warriors obviously didn't with 24 turnovers. I think the other factor here, though, is you have two teams that are switch heavy. We've seen this with some other teams. The Nets run into this a lot. The only exception to this really is Charlotte, that Charlotte switches a ton and they still wind up going fast because they're bad at it. But when you have two teams that are good defensively that switch, it grinds the offense. When you run zone and switch, this is why Toronto does it as much as they used to when they had the personnel to, because it just gets you deeper in the clock. It takes you a second to find out, to figure out. You don't have quick triggers, right? So like the Wolves and Nuggets play at the level of the screen. They want to blitz you. That creates for easy, quick triggers. All right, I'm gonna pass the short roll. They're gonna have to come over. I'm gonna kick to the corner. 1, 2, 3.
As Suns fans saw, last year in the playoffs,
So that, like, that's like the easy solution there. But if you switch everything, it just grinds it down, and you try and evaluate a little bit more, and you try and take your time, and you try and evaluate who's got an edge and who's, and you're also waiting. You'll see this a lot. Chris does this a lot. If a team switches, he will wait to see how you react to that switch. Are you comfortable with it? Because this, again, this gets to what I talked about last night. He would see Warriors defenders creeping. They weren't staying home. They weren't locked in. They were creeping either into the paint or towards the ball handler to try and apply pressure. And when you just wait that out, then you can pass and guys will have opportunities. Harden does this really well too. He does, especially in Houston back before, whatever is going on in Brooklyn. He used to do this a ton, where one of the reasons he would just dribble. You would look and you would see him out of the, you could see him looking out of the corner of his eyes and see if a defender was like, I'm going to go over here and help because in case he gets to the left. And the minute that guy steps over, Harden is quick passing for a three pointer. Like those types of reads, but it does take you longer versus in like drop coverage. Yeah. You come off the pick and you've got A, B, C. It's, all right, he stepped up, so I've got the lob. I'm going to go to that option. Okay, the guy's coming over to tag the roll, so I'm going to kick to the corner. Those types of maneuvers, it's all read-based. Switch is a lot harder, which I do think is one of the reasons why it grinds down more. You see that pretty consistently, which is why teams use it a lot in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's why you have Lu Dort going off in a Game 7 in the bubble, too. Yeah. Right? I mean, it's Chris against those Rockets teams switching. Covington is not equipped to necessarily do what he needed to do there, and the Rockets are a little finicky because their defense is not as good as it used to be, and you see them being taken to seven by a Thunder team that nobody really thought would be there, and Chris had a lot to do with that. So I think that's a great observation. I think it would seem to me like that will continue. I don't think either team's defense, there's not something I think that you're going to see them do better at than what they were doing last night. So, I mean, obviously over the course of a playoff series, if it ever got to that, we would see all sorts of different adjustments. But I thought this game would be lower scoring than maybe most people were expecting. That is what we got. I definitely didn't think it would be 200 combined points. But Look, it felt, again, like a playoff game. It was exhilarating. It was fun. Suns fans went to bed happy. We got one more. See if the Suns can claim that streak as their own, not just tying the franchise record, but taking it. Cade Cunningham and the Pistons coming into town. First night of a back-to-back. I'm sure many of you will be there, so enjoy that. We'll be back right after the game to recap it. He is Matt Moore. He is at HP Basketball. Read him at the Action Network. Listen to him all over the place. And I'll be back with you guys tomorrow.